The business conference where no Africans were allowed. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. U.S. border restrictions and commerce appear to be in conflict in recent days after every African who tried to get U.S. permission to attend an African Economic Development Conference in California were denied visas by the U.S. State Department. It was the University of Southern California's African Global Economic and Development Summit. Following this story is Marketplace's Mariel Segarra, who joins us live. Mariel, do we know how many people were denied visas and where they were coming from?
It was reportedly between 60 and 100 people from at least a dozen countries, including Nigeria, Ethiopia, Sierra Leone, South Africa. A report in The Guardian says none of these applicants were from the countries listed in President Trump's executive order on travel.
Do we know why the visas were denied?
It's hard to say. The U.S. State Department told The Guardian in a statement that it couldn't speculate on why someone might be denied a visa. It just said basically it refutes visas when people are ineligible for them under U.S. law. The conference organizer, Mary Flowers, told us that denials aren't totally unprecedented. In the past, at least 40% of the applicants had their visas denied. But this was a big jump.
So what happened to the conference, which wrapped up this weekend?
Well, Flowers says that normally at least half of the attendees come from Africa. Many of them own businesses, some are civil servants or politicians, and they're trying to partner with investors in the U.S. So she says this was a missed opportunity for the Americans who want to do business in Africa.
Africa is a broad continent, 1.1 billion people. It's got 54 countries. So when you look at that, it's hard for an American to figure out where to go if they want to do business.
She says in the past, African attendees have helped the Americans do things like find suppliers and navigate that market.
All right. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra. Thank you. There's news this hour that U.S. authorities are preventing airline passengers from 10 airports in 8 countries from carrying on electronics bigger than a mobile phone. This covers direct flights to the U.S. from some busy airports, from Istanbul to Dubai. The Trump administration says this is based on, quote, evaluated intelligence. So cameras, iPads, laptops have to go into checked luggage until further notice. Let's check the live markets here. The FTSE index in London is down 0.1%. Stock index futures are mixed. The NASDAQ future up 0.2%. Same with the S&P future. But the Dow future is at this moment down 19 points. It's amazing the fine medical care you get when a hospital's getting inspected. Every few years, a hospital accrediting agency does random checks, and a new study in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine finds the percentage of people dying at those hospitals drops when the inspectors show up. From our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein reports.
If someone looks over your shoulder, like the Joint Commission does during its visits, you may think your work would suffer. Turns out, Dr. Anupam Jena, one of the study authors, says it may be just the opposite.
When someone is watching your activities, you're going to perform at a level that you normally wouldn't be able to perform at.
That's important because in hospitals, careless mistakes cost lives. If medical staff could dial in like when they're watched, the study calculated 3,500 lives would be saved every year. University of Toronto's Dr. Don Ruttlemeyer says there are plenty of examples outside of medicine where behavior can change when people know they're being monitored.
Just like red light cameras and photo radar that are so popular in other countries made a huge difference in terms of traffic safety.
This research offers ammunition to people who think more surveillance is needed in medicine. While Rettelmeyer says some of that already happens, like random spot checks on physician notes or filming of operations, he expects more to come. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Museums around the world are embracing virtual reality, but could turning a collection into a VR experience hurt museum bottom lines? Marketplace's Adrienne Hill reports.
I can explore exhibits from the Guggenheim, the Tate, the Smithsonian, without getting up from my very messy desk in Los Angeles. With the download of an app, I can make my way from the lobby of the Smithsonian's Renwick Gallery to the art upstairs. It's 3D, 360 degrees, so I can look up, look all around.
having something like VR enables us to go to where people are, to their classrooms, to the cities where they live, and to share the experience of being here.
Sarah Snyder is the head of media and technology at the Smithsonian American Art Museum, and she's not at all worried that VR visits will replace the real thing. She says there was the same anxiety back when museums started posting pictures of artwork online.
But in fact, it's had the opposite effect. The more digital images of our artworks we publish online and other places, the greater our attendance is.
People learn something exists, she says, maybe something they didn't know about before, and want to see the original in real life. Something VR can't replicate, at least not yet.
The experience is so clearly partial. It's a hint, it's a glimpse, it's like showing a little bit of stocking, which only makes you want to see more.
That's museum futurist Elizabeth Merritt from the American Alliance of Museums. In VR tours, she says we miss the sounds. The echoes of footsteps, the whispers of conversation, and the smells.
You go into a natural history museum and you may not know it, but you're smelling little bits of naphtha from the specimens that have been in mothballs.
Different, she says, from the smells of fine art museums.
Which in some ways is a much cleaner and brighter smell and has its own distinctive tang.
There may be a day when virtual reality is so immersive the calculation changes, and I can't tell the difference between being at my desk or at the Louvre, but no time soon. There's still a lot of tech that has to be created, including good quality smell-o-vision. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, and Daniel Shin. Our engineer this week is Jake Gorski. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.